Welcome to the Insider's Guide to Finance, where we dive into stories from the front lines of financing public and private companies. I host seasoned CEOs, fund managers, bankers, brokers, and business experts who will answer your questions about how to properly engage investors, finance opportunities, and build outstanding success stories. We dig into the educational how-tos and mechanics of structuring good deals. You'll also hear about strokes of luck, tense negotiations, and the pressures of closing, as well as insights in how to navigate the capital markets. What you'll hear in these interviews may very well change the course of your career, your company, and your life. Welcome back to the Insider's Guide to Finance. In today's episode, we're speaking with Sean Freeman. Sean's a serial entrepreneur with a focus in technology and marketing, and he actually recently sold his business, which is a topic we're going to get into in this conversation. As well as that, I'm looking forward to discussing marketing strategies and how technology is changing this. I'm sure for anybody who's a company builder or in the world of finance or investor relations, this conversation is going to be of value. So I'm looking forward to it. And the best place for us to start is from an introduction from yourself, Sean. So I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah. Hey, Corey. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. Happy to do an intro. So yeah, where should I start? Maybe I'll start just prior to starting my company. I was at an oil and gas company. I was part of the IT department. At that company, I started as like the second IT person right out of school. We grew that company from 100 people to about 1,600 people, went public in the meantime too. And the IT department grew to like 50 or 60 people. So I went through that as my like first out of school job, which is pretty cool. Lots of great learning and thrown into the fire and figure stuff out, which has served me well now. So, and then come 2011, I decided, you know, why not take the chance, right? Take the chance, start my own business. I really love to do it. I love to, oddly, as a tech guy, I liked the relationship side of it. So I really built up those and had people just like, hey, could you help me out? And yeah, after a couple of those, I said, yeah, sure, let's do this. And made the jump over, started my own business. That was in, you know, late 2011. And I said, well, what's the worst that could happen? I'll go get another job. You know, based in Calgary, oil and gas was great. Rocking and rolling in 2011. Not so much in 2012. So glad that worked out because there wasn't too many jobs to get in 2012. Mm-hmm. But we grew the business and I started hiring people and that was really good. And yeah, so that's kind of where my business started. I didn't really know the industry. I didn't know how things worked. Didn't know how to run a business, you know, all those things. So really into the fire, figured it all out. Had lots of great mentors and clients and advisors that I could go and ask, you know, thousands of questions to until I understood it. So I built that business up over the course of almost 9 years. In 2020 is when we sold it. So yeah,
nice.
That's my background. I'd say I come from a technical, you know, training. I did computer science in university, and then I took a master's in management science after that. And yeah, so I'm kind of the, I don't know, I'm a tech guy at heart, but
I've already got tons of questions, which are going to vie from the list of questions I sent you. But can you talk to me, let's talk about the sale of your company and tell me as much or as little as you want when it comes to metrics. I mean, from my background being finance, I want to know the numbers. Like what were the multiples? What was the exit? What was the, did you have a buyout? Did you have an earning kind of thing? And it's kind of like my aunt who was an HR for her career, she just walk up to me and be like, how much are you making? Like a complete stranger. And it's, you know, it's my personal question. So I'm like, how much you sell it for? So please tell us what you can and then we can build from there. I'd love to know more about what it was like to sell your company and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a pretty open book. One of the reasons I sold it is because the company that acquired us, we had a really big vision. We said, hey, let's take this from, you know, our company, your company, and let's like, I think we're going to like 20 times it and go public and buy some other companies. And it was a really exciting story. And I saw that even if we didn't do it all, we would create a lot of cool opportunities for our team and have a lot of fun doing it. So that's the why I decided to go ahead. The money, you know, is obviously good. It's nice to get a big check. And we were about a $5 million company, just shy. We were 23, 24 people.
And that's by revenue.
Yeah, revenue, kind of annual revenue. So our business is luckily, you know, monthly recurring revenue. So our clients they sign up and they stay with us as long as we do a good job, which is a great business model, right? So very predictable, not too lumpy. And yeah, we had a great team, so we delivered a great product. And, you know, even when the people that acquired us were doing due diligence, they're like, oh, can you send us a report on your churn? And I was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, we fired a client last year. Does that count? And we had nothing to send them, honestly. It was pretty crazy. And they were kind of like, okay, well, let's just make sure. have you had any clients stop working with you? And we said, no, just the one that we fired. So that was pretty cool. That was kind of funny because at the time I'm like, well, isn't this how everyone does it? Because, so it was a bit of a realization for me that we were pretty top of the market in quality. And that's kind of stuck with me. I've realized that's a value of mine. Just deliver great quality, do the right thing, take care of the people that work with you. So, and yeah, that served me well. So, I can't imagine how you go wrong with that, how you operate. So yeah, about 5 million revenue. We sold for 7x EBITDA, which is pretty top of the market.
Where do companies like yours usually trade when it comes to EBITDA or revenue multiples?
I'd say a really good multiple is 5x. Okay. EBITDA. So 7 was really, really good. Part of that, like I took the deal, I took some cash up front, I took some shares in the new company, and then I took an earnout over 2 years. And so that multiple was probably boosted because we pretty almost hit our earnout. We didn't get 100%, but we were pretty close for the 2 years. And we closed our deal January 2020, right before the pandemic, and then we still almost hit our earnout. So pretty awesome. Our industry was needed more than ever. Cybersecurity, everybody was working remotely, so I had to get that figured out.
Oh,
so,
yes, of course.
Yeah. So, the clients that needed help and, hey, like we have no revenue coming in, we'd pause their bill, but the ones that were growing, right? And so, yeah, so our earnout really boosted our total payout for sure, but we had a good starting foundation. So
good for you. I just want to say, going back to the fact that, you're like, what do you mean a churn report? When, I think that goes to show potentially the ability to actually capture that kind of outlier of a higher multiple. That's really cool to hear. And then looking back, what would you have done differently? And I ask because, these can be really pivotal events in people's careers as well as their wealth. And it actually reminds me of an interview I did with a gentleman some interviews back. I think it was almost in the teens, Brent Holiday. And he represents tech companies. He represents a seller going to buyers. And his slogan is buyers are liars. And I'm like, that's his, from his career experience. So I'm curious to know how it was for you. And, were there things that changed? How long did it take? What would you have done differently?
Yeah, I think on the sale, I don't think I would have changed anything. I think our deal was fair. I think the structure was great. I think my team got some great opportunities out of it. On the other side of the deal, obviously there's the integration phase, which, COVID actually delayed, right? We probably didn't do any integration for a year and a half. We just kind of kept operating as we were. And that was great. I think we kept doing a great job. Clients kept enjoying that. And that was great. But yeah, and everybody meant well, and they were like, we don't want to break what you're doing. We want to take all those good things and we want to integrate them into what we're doing. At the end of the day, that didn't happen. So they said, well, we've got these great processes that are working for all these other clients, and so they should work for yours, right? But I think there was a misunderstanding of the quality of the service we were delivering. They didn't truly realize like the close touch we had. And that's totally fine. Nobody's fault. I think it's more of just, they didn't understand, right? So that happened. And then we started integrating and, there's no going back. And so, yeah, that was about a year and a half in. I lasted about another year and I left. So the company that acquired my company, TWT Group, was called Fully Managed. They were Canadian wide, except they didn't have an office in Calgary. So they acquired us. And 2 years after that, so January of 22, TELUS bought them. So they bought out the full company across the board, and which I had owned some shares in, and so exited those. And at that point, I knew, I was like, okay, this is fine, but they're going to start to get in here, and I'm no TELUS employee. I'm not really a good employee to begin with. Fully Managed kind of put up with me, but I knew TELUS wouldn't put up with me. So I was like, yeah, this is a good time to say goodbye and leave on a high note.
Good for you, man. Yeah. And it's kind of funny. Once you get out of the corporate mold, you become, broken goods, not fit for employee consumption.
Yeah. And that's fine. We have a place, right, where there's spots that we can make our magic. And that is definitely not big corporations.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm curious, there's always the question, like if you had to do it all over, you had to start all over, what would you do? But I think I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. In starting again, what are the perhaps top three skills that you'd be learning now to start again?
Yeah. If it was my first time starting again, it's really funny because I have a lot of clarity around the answer to that now. One is really figuring out what I'm great at and then not delegating that and delegating everything else. So I'm great at the relationships and sales and the vision of the business, but I'm not good at like the repetitive, tedious, delivery of, technology, like closing tickets and stuff like that. So, but also I would say, and then I'm also not great at like admin stuff and like email and following up on things. So if I had to go back, and I've told multiple people this, my first hire, I hired a tech, like a really good tech, which seems like the obvious choice as a tech company. Oh, we need more techs because we have more clients, right? But I actually would have hired probably a full-time assistant instead. And I would have kept doing the tech myself and kept building those relationships. I think I would have just gotten ahead further. And yeah, the thing about that is that the quicker you get stuff off your plate that you don't enjoy doing, the more fun you're having and the more you can focus on what you're great at. And then you just probably grow faster. So yeah, that'd be one thing.
It makes me laugh. Like I've got this thing and I see it as well. Like I prefer to be selling. And as soon as I get a contract signed, I have this like seller's remorse of, damn it, now I have to do the work. And so, luckily we've got a small team that we can get it in their hands as soon as possible so I don't screw it up. But yeah, I hear you, focusing on it. But it's interesting too, you saying like an assistant first and how that would have given you more horsepower, if you will.
It's funny. And I think there's just like, looking back, I had this weird, like I never thought of it, but even if somebody told me to do it, I probably would have been like, oh, I don't deserve an EA. Like there's like a stigma around it. But like EAs are amazing people, right? Like they're just really amazing at things that I'm not amazing at, right? And there's nothing wrong with having an EA. I think it's just people have this weird guilt. And I've definitely gotten over that now.
Yeah, and not enough credits due to the title of EA because they become an extension of the executive themselves. So I hear you.
Yeah, like I've got an EA now and honestly, going forward, she's probably the only person that will report to me in any business. So she'll manage all the other people that report to me.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
So kind of taking it to that like chief of staff level, right? Like where I just distill my vision and maybe I'll meet with the like COOs of my companies, but they won't report to me.
Okay. So what other skills? If you were to start again.
Yeah, I think the other skill, other than like sales and focusing on that and the relationship building, that's huge. It's probably 70, 75% of what I would focus on. The other piece would be finance. So just getting really good at knowing the numbers and not just knowing what your bottom line is, but knowing your cash flow and knowing how money works, right? How it turns into a breathing, organism. Because as I've learned that, there's lots of tricks you can use, right? And that's important. And it can you can have a profitable business go bankrupt because of cash flow, right?
So. Yeah, absolutely. When you were growing your business and you get $5 million in revenue, what were some of the areas of finance, some of the metrics that you would be just constantly keeping an eye on?
Yeah, for sure. Accounts payable.
Yeah, no kidding.
or receivables, sorry. Yeah. Accounts receivables.
Yeah, who cares about the payables? It's just the receivables.
Yeah. Get the gap between those two as much as you can. But actually funny on the payables, intentionally what we did is any small companies we worked with, we'd pay them like 2 days. Any big companies, we would take that 30, that 60, that 90, and we'd use it all, right? But all the little ones, we would support them. And then it just gained us so much goodwill, which was pretty cool and helps them, right? So,
No, I agree with that.
I actually learned that lesson from one of my early customers. They did the same for us and it really helped. So I carry that forward. And then on the finance numbers side of things, another metric we kept an eye on was just percent of, like, we list all of our customers and say what percent of revenue is each one. And we'd make sure that that never got, like, you know, two or three were 20, 30, 40%. And if they were starting to go there, we would figure out ways to balance that out by, you know, adding some other bigger clients to, like, offset it, or just planning ahead saying, hey, they, you know, they might outgrow us and let's plan for that. So that was important. And then free cash flow, right? I mean, Amazon runs their business on that number.
Yeah.
You know, they're losing money, but have great free cash flow. So,
yeah. Okay.
So that matters, right? And I don't think a lot of entrepreneurs even understand what that means. They're like free cash flow, but really don't understand, like, how it feels on a month-to-month basis, right?
Take me into how you learned that. Like, you know, what was that lesson like for you and how did it apply to your business?
Yeah, I mean, really just understanding, like, you start operating your business on a credit card and then, like, we had one of our vendors, they always start you out on a credit card, right? Because they're like, you don't have your credit with us. Mm-hmm. But then our monthly bill with them was like 100K. So we were putting 100 grand on a credit card every month for them. And they came to us, they're like, oh, we, you know, can you switch to net terms? And I'm like, yeah, if you give me net 90, right? Because otherwise it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I'll take the points. Yeah. And the 20 days after it goes through to pay you, right? No problem. And they actually gave it to us. And the funny thing is this vendor, when we got acquired by the company that was 350 people, our terms with that vendor were net 90 and the bigger company had net 30.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. So we had better terms than a company a lot bigger than us, which was kind of funny.
You know, it's bring that up. Like, my first job out of university was with a small consumer electronics company. And they basically threw me behind the bank accounts, a spreadsheet, and I kind of became the controller for the company. And the cash flow management and going through it and, you know, your checks in the mail while at the same time you're phoning up saying, like, you know, come on, let's go. And then, like, London Drugs is one of our customers. They'd pay us 20 days when they had 45. It was just like, it was a beautiful thing. We loved them, you know, and so that there's goodwill in that. But it's a real art to sit there and to be able to manage your cash flow. It's really interesting.
And it can really nurture relationships, mm-hmm. right? Because, and we were always like, if a client was running into some problems or something was going on, we'd be like, hey, how can we help? Right. And let's work through this together. Because if you don't make it, you're not a client, you owe us a bunch of money. But if we can help, let's help. And even in COVID, that was even more so. Yeah, the art of, like, I think it clicked for me when I realized sitting down with my accountant and we're like, okay, our average AR is 9 days because we did, like, pre-authorized debit on everything. And our average AP was like 42. And I'm like, oh, so, like, we're a bank for a month, like, mm-hmm. literally.
Yeah.
So that's pretty powerful, right?
Yeah. Oh, fascinating, man. That's cool. Well, so that was your company, your previous company. What are you up to now?
Yeah. So I took like 6 months off solid, did some travel. I enjoyed the thinking time and yeah, nice to have that time off and just really let your brain kind of connect the dots. So I did that. And then in the spring last year, I jumped into digital transformation consulting. There's a Canadian grant called the CDAP grant, and I'm an advisor for it. So I've launched that and nurtured a bunch of relationships that I've had and used that grant to help them out, right? The government's basically paying for my services for them just to help them figure out technology. As an advisor, I don't like implement anything, so it's great. They get to get my advice and then use that and go and make their business better. So I've been doing that. And yeah, like you mentioned before, just building on my LinkedIn personal brand. Like, what I realized last year is, like, people don't buy from me because of my company. They buy from me because of me. It's the relationship. They're like, oh, you know, Sean has something I need. I trust Sean. I know if something goes wrong, he'll take care of it and make it better and make it right every time. And that's super valuable. And then you can't sell that with your company, right? That doesn't go away. So
I get the impression that you were, I wouldn't say reluctant entrepreneur, but not somebody who was looking to sell for a big exit. It's almost like it's irrelevant. You're looking to deliver great service and a great experience and kind of make people happy. This is the first time we've ever met. Yeah. This is what I'm getting from you.
Yeah. Definitely like using technology to make other people's, make an impact in their business and their lives, right? Because, you know, everybody knows like if technology's not working, you're frustrated, you can't make money, you can't deliver the product or service you're supposed to. So it's a big deal, right? And I don't think, like, you don't realize that until it's a problem, right? And so, yeah, that's definitely my focus and taking that impact in other people's businesses and then using that to help my community and build community that, you know, utilizes all the connections and goodwill that I've created to help others too, right? I don't know. We're all in it together, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just got to like, just speak to a couple of being in the world of finance and the world of public markets, it can be very much a taker's market. And so finding people who are willing to give their time, their energy, their shoulder to cry on, like it's just, it's a tough place to be at times, is very rare. And so it's nice to hear what you're saying here. It's like, it's a breath of fresh air, man, even though we're in different worlds, different industries. But it's
for sure.
Yeah.
It's just like Simon Sinek's infinite game, right? Like I'm not in this to like take. And then when nobody wants to give me anything, I'm kind of done and I get to retire, you know, like I'm in it for the long run. And yeah, I don't know. I've always had the experience if I help other people, it comes back to me so much bigger, maybe from them, maybe from someone else, maybe just from, I get to feel good, right? Like giving things is the most selfish thing you can do because, you know, you can't buy that feeling, right?
Selfish or selfless?
Selfish, right? Like giving and charity and helping other people out is the most selfish thing you can do. Because like if I give you something, like I get a feeling that I can't go to the store and buy it.
Okay.
Right? I'm like, I impacted Corey's business and, you know, all it took was something I had in my head.
Yeah.
Or a connection.
Yeah.
I can't go buy that. And like, I've earned it. Like I've built it and learned it and earned it. And I'm like, here's a gift, Corey, or someone, right? Like, and it impacts them, costs me nothing, but I couldn't buy it.
Yes. Right? I gotcha. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's nice to see, man. It's nice to hear. And so I'm curious about with your focus, having come from an IT business and having a computer science and a technological background, how do you see things changing, whether it be in your world or for more IT, for the technology grants that you're speaking to, for the world of marketing? What do you see coming down that's interesting or perhaps even scary for you?
Yeah, it's funny, like all this tech and AI and just, you know, even the Apple Vision, like just ways to be disconnected, right? And to go after the taking and, you know, all this stuff, I think their relationships become more valuable. And I've started to realize that is like people value quality time. They value presence. You know, like if we ever went for lunch, Corey, I'd put my phone on the table, like face up, right? I'd go like this. I'd put it face up. As soon as I got a notification, I flip it over and not even look at it. It's a little trick I have to like tell you that I value our presence.
I like it.
And I'm not going to like, oh, hold on one sec, sorry. And then I'll put it away. I purposefully just flip it over. Because to me, it's important that I know I'm present with you and then you see it too. And then you just get deeper connections, right? So I think that's really become evident. And yeah, there's all this hype, like, you know, look at cryptocurrency and NFTs, like, well, that bubble popped, yes. Right?
Yeah.
So, but like that relationship and connection bubble is never going to pop.
You know, that's interesting you say that you actually like, you know, intentionally phone on the table. Inevitably, you're getting a notification and the act of flipping it over saying like, no, that's not important right now is it's an expression of showing that you value the person. I think that's really interesting. What else do you do? And I'll give you one that I've done that I think is just like, it's like a lever of relationships and that's a handwritten note, you know, text message, email, whatever. It just, you know, people disqualify it right away. You send them and they actually open something up and they read something you hand wrote. Even if it was like, great to see you. God, it goes a far, long way.
Yeah. I mean, the other one that's kind of obvious that a lot of people don't do is I'll just reach out to people and say, hey, let's grab a coffee or let's grab lunch with no agenda. I've had people be like, yeah, so what's going on? Like, why did you want to have lunch? I'm like, because we both have to eat. And rather spend it with you than myself and my dog. Well, maybe my dog. I'd love to have lunch with my dog, but, you know, I'd rather have connection with you. And so just like doing things for connection and that's it, right? Like for no other reason than just to like build that relationship. So I think that's a key that like, yeah, people just forget that you're okay. It's okay to go for lunch with no agenda.
Right? Yeah.
It's okay to build relationships that you have no idea if they'll mean anything or give you any money later, right? It's the whole idea. Like if you want a field next year, if you want like a crop of wheat next year, you got to start planting the year before, you know? And then the other thing too is like you almost, as an entrepreneur, you have to start planting and not even knowing what'll grow, right? Like just try to meet good people that have the same values that, and eventually it's going to create something for one or both of you.
That's interesting to hear you say that, because sometimes I criticize myself and struggle for that. It's a matter of you have to plant these seeds, and in planting those seeds, sometimes it's hard to make sure you're nurturing them all, you're cultivating them all. And what becomes distraction and what becomes part of strategic focus?
Yeah, I think for me, the answer to that is just the quality of the people, right? Like, I want to be around people that share my values, that want to help others. It doesn't need to be me if they want to help others, right? Like that's a value. And also people that think about the long game. They're not thinking about, oh, can I hit my quarterly sales by doing this meeting, right? But then the flip side to it too is you have to say no to the people that you know don't match your values and they just want the coffee. Like somebody messages me and says, let's grab a coffee. And if I can tell what they want, I usually say no.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm like, you should have had the coffee 6 months ago when you didn't want anything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So like I'll actively avoid takers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. What about other sales? I mean, I'm curious to see how you've approached sales in your past, because there's only so far a referral can go. And when you're working in a business that's a service business, I think that, yeah, you have to get out there and knock on some doors kind of thing. How have you approached that?
Yeah, I'd say out of the $5 million in revenue, at least 90% of it was referral.
Wow. Maybe that's a better question. Take me down that path. How, from a leadership and a culture standpoint, how did you create a profitable organization that could deliver that?
Yeah, I think it's, again, the right people aligning and helping them. And then, you know, not being afraid to ask for referrals, like, hey, keep us in mind if you know anybody. And like we turned clients into like raving fans. So like they would spread the word without us even asking. And then we would just get these referrals. And it's funny, I think maybe there's a bit of a misconception about how valuable referrals are. Because again, back to the, you know, everybody thinks they should do things certain ways. Like I thought I should hire a tech as my first hire. And my second and my third and my fourth and my fifth hire, right? Like I didn't actually hire an assistant until like we had 15, 17 people my first go, which is like, I look back, I'm like, you're such an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. Like super, you know, amateur move, right? And so I think, yeah, aligning yourself with clients that match your values and then helping them, right? We'd refer business to our clients. We'd be like, oh, like what other clients of ours need your service, and like make connections and, you know, try to help them out. Like, I'm pretty sure we had a lot of opportunities where we would introduce a customer to one of our other customers and like we would pay our bill for them. Like that sale and that intro would pay the IT bill that we would send.
Right.
Them. And so they're like, well, I can't not work with these guys. They're paying for themselves.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, for us, it was taking it outside of the like vendor client relationship to like a real partnership. Everybody we did business with, we tried to partner with them and not just from a marketing term partner.
Yeah.
Like we actually like, how do we help you outside of what we are selling you?
Yeah. Yeah. It goes a long way, doesn't it? In the sense of like actually looking out for their best interest, if you can, even if it's completely unrelated by, you know, hooking up on business or something. Like, I really appreciate that. Something that I found myself doing is once in a while, I'll get a, you know, text message and it will have the word partner in it from a client, like something along the lines of like, thank you for being such a good partner. And I save it because I'm just like we're doing something right. And it really feels like I value that kind of contribution to their business and their life. It's
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. It takes business to another level. And it's just like, it's so much more enjoyable, right? You get to have fun. You get to be like, yeah, you know, today wasn't a great day, but we made impact for a lot of people or, you know, it's a bit stressful, but you know, we know that we make this world better. Yeah. Right.
Now, what about times when like you just seem, you're so chill, man. You're just like, I like to be happy and help. And I'm like, oh, what a nice guy. But there had to be times which like, you know, mistakes were made, hell was happening. Like, what was that like? And, you know, were there things you could have done better when you look back?
Oh, always, for sure there was. Yeah. I think the funny thing too is I think my like chillness, I guess, has actually like, it's a good thing in the business I'm in, right? Because like when your computers aren't working or when you just got hacked or when you just clicked a phishing email and probably shouldn't have, like calling me is probably going to help you like relax and bring you confidence and like, okay, they got it. It's okay. Like, you know, we'll figure this out. So I often joke that we're like technology psychologists. Like okay. You come to us, it's like, tell us about your problems. And then we help you navigate to the solution. And then you feel better and you're happy and you get that confidence. And so that's, I think, yeah, my mannerisms and how I am as a person probably has helped me in this role and being able to offer that to our clients and even my team in general, right? Like, you know, a lot of them are like, oh my God, this is a big problem. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. It's happened and, you know, we can't reverse it. What's the best way forward, right? And, you know, you got to take control of the chaos, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine like when you're dealing with clients and their IT systems go down or hacked or their whatever, I mean, that's the pressure starts to mount.
Yeah. And a lot of the times, like, honestly, we've had a lot of incidents where we would go in and we'd bring a new client on and we'd say, okay, here's the top five things. These are all red priority. We should probably do them like yesterday. Here's kind of the less urgent ones, you know, and then 2 months would go by and we wouldn't get approval. In some instances, like what we said could happen actually happens in that period. Mm. Right. So like, it's a weird spot because you could be like, we told you so.
Yeah. Right?
Like we did. They already know we did. But it's like, okay, like no worries. Like we almost have to be like, okay, no worries. It's like, it's fine. We can try to do this and hopefully it works. And then, you know, like, let's go and do that because we know we need to. And obviously we don't want this to happen twice. And so you kind of have to like be by their side, you know, be like, and the other thing too, is you have to realize that businesses don't have unlimited resources and they have competing priorities. Right. So it's like, you know, it's just a matter of fact, this happened. Right. So, but it's a kind of a weird, sticky situation because
mm-hmm. right? You want to pull up the email and just kind of be like, no, we told you, but you got it.
Yeah. I've had situations like that where it was like, oh, you know, like the backups weren't working. And it's like, I actually like walked in on a conversation and they were like, well, he didn't tell us it was that urgent. Literally heard that. And I'm like, hey guys. And I was like, I've got a copy of the email on my computer, but you know what? Let's just focus on the solution here. Mm-hmm. We don't need to like get into that because it's not going to help anybody. So let's move forward. You can go check your email later if you want. But, you know, and so it's like, you know, you get into those weird spots and, you know, nobody wants to be wrong or, yeah, it's really weird. But, yeah, we become that psychologist and that's where that trust really matters, right? That trust that you actually care about them and you really want to help them, right? And I think the problem is like there's, with IT especially, there's no barrier to entry. So there's so much, you know, there's so many bad providers out there. There's a lot of good ones. There's a lot of in-between ones. And so a lot of people have had bad experiences, right? And so once you get to this level of somebody actually cares about you, your business, and your success, then it's like, it's just sometimes it's like, wow, we got actually, this is legit, you know?
You know, I think,
and back to all the referrals, right?
Yeah. And I was just going to say, like, you know, whether it's an internal support for a software product or however, in your case, like IT managed service kind of thing, and being of just like a great support, I look at it and I'm like, it's amazing. It can start to become a profit center or like a revenue generating center when you create
competitive advantage.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. Just recently, Shanna was working on our website and issue wasn't happening. It's all built on Wix, and then the editor X and all this kind of stuff. And then there's always problems. And so she reached out, she's on support, and the support person stops, goes and asks a colleague to check a couple of things. They both check it. They both come back and say, yeah, no, it's all working from our side. So like, you know, it's not me, it's you, which is fine. We just resolve the problem. But it was an example of kind of support, which built equity with it. Like, I'm like, wow, it's so nice to know they're actually there. She's having a good experience. It's helping her. I don't know. I think sometimes people forget this.
Yeah. And it's funny. We would like, when we would sign up customers, we would go to them and we'd say, look, like this person referred you and, you know, we know what the typical market offers for our services and we're going to be more expensive, right?
Okay.
You know, our bill will be more, but if you look at it like an investment, you will get a lot more. Like it'll be disproportionate, the results you get and the competitive advantage you get from working with us.
Hmm.
And I think that's a bit of a mindset shift. And it takes a certain maturity of company to understand that they can actually turn that extra spend in technology into top line revenue for a better customer experience, better employee experience, and then bottom line profitability, right? Because, you know, technology influences every part of every business now. Right. And if you don't have a good advisor, good company, good partner, you're going to get mediocre. And, you know, everybody can do mediocre.
Hmm.
And that's what all your competitors are doing. So how do you get a competitive advantage with mediocre?
So would you sell like that? Like, would you go in 100%. And just say that, like, sit down and say, like,
first thing we'd say,
yeah,
we're going to be the most expensive. Yeah.
Wow.
And we know why, because we're worth it. And we know the impact for your business will be worth it.
How long did it take you to get to that point in your business where you're like, this is our position? This is our positioning in the market.
Yeah, probably about 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
So we got into it there. And that's when we really started to see that that's what we provided. And our clients will come back and say, look, like we've grown because we haven't had to focus on that technology and all these things you've helped us automate and, you know, these other tools that we put in place to make the experience with our customers better. Like that's all made an impact in our business and it's more than paid for itself with your bill. So yeah, we just had to start telling that story and helping people realize it. But like we've had some of those conversations and then the customer be like, hey, I went to bat for you. I know it's more expensive. I've like put my neck out. You got to prove it. Right. And then 3 months later, they'd be like, yeah, you didn't lie at all.
Hmm. That's cool. We talked a ton about your former business, which is, I think it's all great and it's really insightful. What else are you doing now? So you're doing the advisory for these grants and there's got to be more, I can imagine.
Yeah. So the digital transformation consulting with the grant, I launched a newsletter called The Art of Technology. So again, like just taking some tidbits out and really sharing that wisdom with people in a really easy to understand way. It's free once a week, pretty good value. So people can sign up for that, theartoftech.com. And so that's really, you know, that's a give back thing for me. Yeah. And those are really the two things I'm working on. Yeah. I'm coaching a couple IT providers out there that have become close friends and really trying to help just increase the industry and make everybody better.
Bring some zen into their organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even just like, bring better IT to businesses like through helping those people think differently, right? I think it's funny and there's like a big gap because you get these tech people starting companies and they have to go through the struggles of actually like becoming a good business leader,
okay.
Right? Which is nothing to do with tech.
Yeah.
Right? It's so, and yeah, I figured it out the hard way, got lucky, learned a ton of lessons, and somehow made it through and you know, it's not difficult stuff, but it's like a lot of it's not for not, it's very foreign to tech people, like relationships and cash flow, like those things matter, right? Because if you don't have those, you're not going to build a business. You're not going to make impact. You're going to be running on razor thin margins and you're not going to be able to provide above average service.
Yeah. Yeah. What about leadership? Kind of what lessons have you learned along the way and as you grew your business?
Yeah, I think we did a really good job of that. The way I built my business is I thought of it as a place, I built it so it would be a place that I would want to work at. And I figured as long as it met that checkbox, that single checkbox, it'd probably be a pretty good place.
Okay.
Because I'm a bad employee and I wouldn't want to work somewhere that, you know, didn't make me feel good and like coming to work, right? So, and just building a team that really cared about the clients, they cared about the vision, and they cared about each other, right? They helped each other out, mentored each other, you know, no, that's not my job.
Yeah.
You can't get away with that in a 25 person company.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a telco, but.
Yeah. How do you teach that though? Like you can hire for it, but can you actually teach for it? Because you can't hire somebody and they check all the boxes.
Yeah, the key I learned along the way on how to find people that added to that culture, I did learn that you can't find people that match your culture. It's actually like pretty impossible. You find people that add to your culture. And the way you do that is that you get really clear on your values as a company, which the way I did that is I wrote my values down and I took them to the team and said, hey, how do these sound for values? And they're like, yeah, that's what we're already doing. Mm. I'm like, And I knew that validated because I was building a company I wanted to work at. So I built it on my values and I just put them on paper. And then we figured out how to hire to those values. We would ask questions that were values related to those values. Even when you applied, we would say, tell us which one of our values is the one that most resonates with you and why. It actually filtered out a lot of applications because people either wouldn't answer it or they'd put a value that wasn't ours. They'd make one up. I don't know where they got it from. But they were clearly on our website. So, and then the beautiful thing about the values and the clarity around that is like you make decisions based on them, right? Like two of our values were freedom and do what's right.
Okay.
And so every time we were like, do we work with this client? We'd say, well, does it support our freedom? And does doing it feel like the right thing to do? And if one of those was a no, we just wouldn't work with them.
Do you think that that was a benefit of, you know, being in a profitable, good place? And like, how did that change? Because I'm sure there was a time where you're like, I got to take this client, even though they're like, you know, the devil reincarnated. Got to take them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like the startup days when you come out of the gate and you're like, oh, I'm just going to get clients by charging less. Like worst mistake you could do, which I don't think we actually made too bad. We like our hourly rate and our user rate that we charged at the beginning, I actually purposefully like just copied our competitors. We were maybe a tiny bit lower, but not like half. But a lot of people, I've seen so many techs come out and be like our rate was 175 a user. I've seen techs come out and charge 60. And I'm like, you're not creating a business.
Yeah, how's that whole model work? 175 a user? Are we're not talking 175,000, are we? Or like what's the
No, $175 a user per month, okay. Right? So it's a per month. And so if you had a 10-person company, it'd be $1,750 a month, right? And we would include everything, all your security software, all of our support, call us as much as you want, all the cybersecurity proactive tasks that we would do. But other people come out at $50 a user. And I'd be like, there's no way you're providing a proper service, let alone making any margin. Never mind, you're probably going to not even make $100,000 next year, even if it's just
stack up a lot of users to.
Yeah, and a lot of headache and a lot of clients that want to pay $50 a user,
yeah,
which are the clients I don't want.
Okay. Wow.
So there's a bit of this, like when you're getting started, you know, it's a little scarcity mindset and not, you know, for good reason, because you don't know what you're doing. You don't have the relationships, but you have to build like when you're starting a business, you got to build with 5 years out in mind. Otherwise, you're going to have a heck of a lot of cleanup to overcome those growth obstacles. Because At $50 a user, when you go from one person to 10 people, you're going to realize that $50 a user customer is costing you money to keep them.
The amplification of it downhill.
Your cost of goods is you're paying them to stay a customer.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And so, but if you don't have that vision of like, if all you're thinking is like, oh, revenue in my pocket to pay my salary, that's the only thing you're thinking of, you're never going to grow. And that's why there's so many 2-3 person MSPs out there.
Okay.
It's because they don't get it. They don't get the business side cash flow.
Now, what's AI and some of these technologies going to do to the industry that's kind of been so important to you over the years? Like, how's that going to?
I think MSPs are going to have to hire more technically savvy people that are, you know, they can integrate that AI into the business and then use it to help them, right? So now one tech is doing the work of two, but he's getting paid more, right? And then really just helping, like when I started my company in 2011, computers still broke and everybody had servers still, and there was all these headaches. Those headaches are all gone. Computers work. If they don't, then you go to the Apple store or you go to the Lenovo store and you get it fixed. Nobody has servers. Everything's on the cloud. And so now the job of an MSP, like an IT provider, is to come in and say, well, you've got all these tools. You're using 10% of all of them. How do we use at least 50, 60, 70% of them? And how do we optimize your business around that?
Okay.
So you can grow without having to hire, because there is a skilled labor shortage, right? And people are harder to find and they're more expensive and cost of living is going up. So you have to do this. Otherwise, you're out of business.
Yes.
And so you need a good provider to help you do that.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, the $50 an hour or $50 a user guy doesn't have time to sit down with you and take it that far.
Yeah. Really interesting. And now I can see this progression of how you went from that business and you're able to sell and move into some of the advising now what you're doing. But it sounds like you could have your second act here again with something.
Yeah. I think just that unbiased advice around technology is becoming more and more valuable. Right?
That's a really good point. Yeah. Because if my computer doesn't turn on, then I'm just like, I don't know what to do. So there's probably so many out there like me who would really value, that unbiased just look and say, hey, we're here to support you. But then, another point you made, it's like there's such low barriers to entry that you can have really bad people. How do you identify somebody who doesn't know what they're doing when it comes to this stuff?
And that's the problem. Like the reason that these people are around there is because the consumer can't identify that. They're just like, they just trust and they don't know and they're not educated enough to know, right? So it's like there's so many blind spots that people have that they don't realize. Like, I don't know if you're using Google or Microsoft, but do you think that they back up your data and that if because it's there, it's safe?
Like, totally.
Yeah. No, it isn't. That's the assumption most people make. It's not true. Like, they operate under a shared responsibility model. And so their responsibility is that if their infrastructure has a problem, they'll have backups. But if you get hacked or get a phishing email or one of your rogue employees is mad and deletes your files and quits, that's on you.
Wow. Okay. We're already.
You can't just call Microsoft and say.
Like, we just ripped through like almost 60 minutes, but you're just opening up a whole new conversation I want to have.
Tons of blind spots.
Yeah. Right? Take me down that path real quick. I might start wearing tinfoil. I get paranoid about these things, but talk to me about some of the areas where small businesses are just so exposed that they need to be aware.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like you can't assume because you're in the cloud that everything's secure, because you're working with Microsoft or Google and everything is secure and backed up and you're good and you've done what you need to do. You also can't do the same for Apple. Like, Apple is more secure, but it's not bulletproof, right? In fact, Apples are actually targeted more because typically what happens is the CEO and the CFO have a MacBook. Everybody else has a PC. So the top people in the business have the Apple. So if I'm a hacker, who am I going to go after?
Yes. Okay. So there's a bigger prize behind that door.
There's a bigger prize. And then the other thing too is like, a lot of people assume, oh, I'm just 10 people. Like, nobody's going to target me as a hacker. Nobody is targeting anybody. It's all bots. It's all automated.
Right.
And now it's all AI. And
it's all indiscriminate, eh?
Yeah, it's totally indiscriminate. And then once they get you, they'll be like, oh, yeah, they're 10 people. Okay, a ransomware will be $100,000. Cool. And they'll pay it because they have to, and it's cost them less than not being in business, right? But the problem is, like, you're not big enough to not get hacked. Like, you'll be targeted because everybody gets targeted, but you won't make the news. And that's why people have this misconception that they won't get hacked. It's just the big guys, because it's the only the big guys hitting the news, right? And so, yeah, and the other thing, too, is that, like, the problem is, like, because there's such a diversity of IT knowledge out there, it's like you can go to an IT guy and he can be like, oh, you know, you don't need a backup for that. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine that you're trying to make me not spend money, but, like, what's the risk? And really thinking about it like a business. I find that a lot of tech people like to build trust by saying that you don't need something, but not informing you enough so that you can make the call. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because a lot of tech people aren't, like, personable enough to boil it down to a way that you can understand it.
Okay.
They can only speak the jargon, and then you don't really get enough to make the
call. Yeah. Right? Oh, boy. I'm freaked out now. It didn't take long. So what can we do as small business owners who are, I mean, that's what I think, like, you make such a good point. This isn't getting targeted. It's mass indiscriminate bots that are out there just looking to penetrate and get in and get, you know, do what they need. So
they'll fish anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And how can we initially protect ourselves? What do we need to be doing to avoid this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think, and the thing is, if you're running a business, again, like, back to what the role of a proper MSP these days should be, is that MSP should come in and they should take care of all the security foundational things for you. They should say, okay, your Microsoft and Google data is backed up. We've got extra protection for phishing. We've enforced multi-factor authentication. Like, those three things, really easy to do. Doesn't cost a lot of money. I've seen so many MSPs these days that don't include those in their package. And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like, such low hanging fruit. But all that is kind of like your electricity bill. It should just come standard with your MSP. And then after that, the investment you're making with your MSP, $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, depending on your size, that should all go into creating competitive advantages using technology for your business.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
and it should pay for itself.
Yeah. And is that, like, are there MSPs out there? And this is totally, I'm asking this for my benefit now, man. So I hope you're okay with it. We'll share it so people might get. But are there, like, MSPs out there who are really focused industry specific? Like, if you're a marketing organization and you're helping companies, are there ones that can come in and say, hey, like, we'll cover the security piece, but there's also some great integrations and there's great tools coming along. Here's how it can drive efficiency here. You know, or other industries, like, are they industry specific?
There are some. There's more in the US. There's not so many in Canada, but the specific ones, they're more around, like, healthcare and financial services and those people that have actually been regulated to put certain technology in place because they are so valuable of targets. Mm. But I can't think of a MSP that's targeting marketing companies or, you know, so, but the difference is that most businesses now, if you are using sort of, like, average tech, you should be on Microsoft 365 or Google. And so a lot of MSPs will support one or the other or both, and then Mac or PC, right? So you can really drive into those. And the thing about it is, when I started my company, actually, we signed up with Google because they were the better platform at the time. Now I would argue Microsoft has provided, like, tons more value. Mm-hmm. And if you have Microsoft 365, I'd probably bet you $100 you're not using more than a quarter of it.
Really?
You're using it for email, maybe OneDrive for files, maybe Teams.
Yeah.
And that's probably all you're using.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a quarter of what they give you, and that's included in your package.
Okay.
You're paying for it. You don't even know you have it.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay, man.
So tons of low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, really, really fascinating. And I've never delved into this world and what you shared with me, so I really appreciate it. I just, in looking to wrap up the conversation, I'm curious, one is, any books or other podcasts or kind of other media you consume? What keeps you interested?
Yeah, yeah. There's a great podcast by a gentleman called Tyler Chisholm, another
Calgarian. Oh, yeah, of course. I know Tyler very well.
He's got a great podcast I always follow. A book that I really love is Dan Martell's Buy Back Your Time.
Okay.
If you're a new entrepreneur, it really lays out a framework on how to delegate and how to not wait, you know, way too many years to hire an EA. So that's a really good one that I would recommend. And then the other one that I really like is Stan Sullivan, Who Not How.
Yeah, right. Actually, I'm reading that right now.
Yeah, it's a great book. As entrepreneurs, we're always like, I got this great idea. How can I go do it? The shift is like, you should ask yourself, who do I need to either partner up or hire to do it? Who's the expert? Because I'm not the expert. I'm the visionary. I got the idea. I don't have the expertise or the execution,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I, that's actually been a real paradigm shift for me in starting to ask myself that question. Who's going to help me with this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
those two books and that podcast for
sure. Oh, nice.
And check out my newsletter. I think there's lots of good stuff in there to just empower small businesses to know what they're doing and know what they might be missing.
Yes, absolutely. We'll put that in the show notes. And otherwise, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for making the time,
thanks,
Sean.
Corey. Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Insider's Guide to Finance. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share this with your friends and colleagues so they can benefit as well. You can also subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or the Play Store. Your support there is really appreciated. For future episodes, if there's a question, topic, or specific person you'd like me to interview, feel free to reach out. You can connect with me on LinkedIn or through my website at creativereturn.ca.